Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com. Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Facebook's rolling out a new feature. Now, you can do more than share photos, articles, and status updates with your friends. You can now, or very soon, also send them money right there in Facebook Messenger. Click, click, done. Apple Pay and Google Wallet already have many people using their phones to buy things. Facebook and a bunch of others are hoping you never write a check to a friend or dig into your wallet to pay your teenager's allowance again. But mobile money comes with new security concerns and questions about how it will change our relationship with money and maybe each other. This hour on Point, mobile money and the way the world works. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you already beaming money right and left to friends, family, the plumber? Do cash and checks sound like horse and buggy to you? And what changes when the money just goes with a click? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. If you're in this world and using it every day, you know all about it. If you're not, there are a lot of players out there. Here's just kind of a bit player, but it gives you the idea. This is an introductory video from an app called Pop Money. Pop Money, a person-to-person payment service accessed online or via mobile device.
Say hello to Pop Money, the new and easy way to pay and get paid. Pop Money lets you send or request money from friends, family, or anyone at all. All you need is their name and email address or mobile number to move money from your bank account to theirs.
Pop Money, simple as that. Maybe guitars will play in the background. And the one many people are doing, so many it's become a verb, Venmo. V-E-N-M-O allows people to transfer money to each other. Here's another one of those promotional videos.
Venmo makes it easy to pay your friends. Split rent, dinner, anything. It's for times when you don't have cash. It's for epic showdowns and endless rematches.
For times when you don't have cash, but you've got your smartphone, it's in your hand, which means your bank account is in your hand, and money from that account very soon in, let's say, a friend's hand, if you're dividing the bill for lunch. With me from New York now is Allison Griswold, business and economics reporter at Slate. She broke a story about a security hole in the mobile money app Venmo. You can link to her articles at our website, onpointradio.org. Allison, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I want you to tell us about the story of that security lapse, and only one of any number, I guess. But first, just introduce Venmo. Many people won't need the introduction, but for those who do, what is it? How's it work? How's it different from Apple Pay that we see people at Starbucks, you know, stepping up and sort of waving their cell phone? What's Venmo? How's it work?
Sure. Venmo is a really popular mobile peer-to-peer payment app. Basically, you put it on your phone, and it's both payments and social. So you can essentially send money to your friends, almost like you'd send a text message through their contact information. And you also see a feed of the transactions all your friends have made. So that's the social component. You know, like Joe and Abby went for pizza on Tuesday, and Scott and Sam got drinks on Wednesday.
You see the flow of money right there as you would see Facebook posts. The social part of it is for what? Do people now, are we so social that we want to know what everybody, I guess it's our Facebook list that comes in here to Venmo, that everybody in our universe, how they're sharing and spending?
I think a lot of it is that for Venmo, if all your friends are on it and you can see what they're doing, that sort of helps incentivize you to sign up yourself. Because you feel like, you know, it's fear of missing out. You feel like there is this cool social network that's also useful that you could be a part of, too. And so the more social it is, the easier it is for them to probably grow their user base.
Difference from Apple Pay. Apple Pay is linked up to your credit card. When you use that, it's a credit card charge. Venmo and these others are coming straight out of your bank account, straight into someone else's with just a few taps, clicks.
Yeah, so when you sign up for Venmo, they give you a couple choices. You can decide to link a bank account with your routing number. You can link a debit card or you can link a credit card. Most people will do the debit or the bank account because the credit card carries a standard transaction fee, which actually is to help guard against fraud. But Venmo doesn't really tell you when you're signing up, warning, this could be risky if you were to link it to your bank account. So most people will just want to avoid the fee, and they will choose one of those options.
You tell the story of Chris Gray, 30-year-old web developer in New York. He woke up one day and something was going on.
Yeah, so he woke up and he had a notification from Chase Bank saying that someone had taken, or saying that he supposedly had paid someone $2,850 through Venmo. He had no recollection of doing this.
One might remember a sum like that.
You would think so.
Yeah.
So he tried to get into his Venmo account, but found that his password didn't work anymore. He basically forced a reset and saw that all his personal information had been changed, his notifications were disabled, and someone had presumably gotten into his account and then used it to transfer all that money to another account, and it was gone.
Hard to reach Venmo in part because, though a lot of people have signed up and are using this, they travel with a pretty light footprint. They've got something like 70 employees with all these people moving money around on the back of their app.
Right. So what's astounding is that Venmo is now doing almost $1 billion in payments a quarter. But for a long time, they've only had, like you said, about 70 employees. And they're owned by PayPal, which has a much larger transaction volume. But they also have, you know, more than 10,000 employees. So the scale is just totally out of proportion.
Where's this going? Facebook is now jumping into this really kind of as we speak. Just in the last week or so, they've started to announce and begun to roll out. Not everybody may have it yet, but right there in Facebook Messenger, the kind of texting within Facebook, I guess you can or will very soon be able to do the same thing. Boom, here goes money from my account to yours just in a message.
Yeah, it's a similar concept to Venmo's. Facebook's feature has been rumored for a while, but like you said, they're just getting started with rolling it out. You basically tap a dollar sign icon, fill in the amount of money you want to send, and then you enter your card information and it completes the transfer.
Why is Facebook getting into this?
The reason they've given so far is basically that they noticed when people were using the Messenger app, they might be discussing conversations about, oh, I need to pay you some money. And then they would leave the Messenger app to do the transaction elsewhere, maybe in, say, Venmo. And so from Facebook's perspective, right, it's better if you can keep everyone in your own app and give them that service yourself than seeing them go somewhere else to do that.
Keep everybody in the world. They make money on ads anyway, so the more you're around, the more they make.
You would think so.
Presumably with a giant like Facebook in here, this is for real. This isn't going away by any means. This is growing.
Yeah. What's interesting is there's sort of an age gap between what people think is easiest, right? So for younger people, millennials, they don't like using checks because they see it as a hassle. Oh, I have to write you a check. I have to deposit your check.
Yeah.
I could just Venmo you. But for a lot of people, right, who are used to checks, maybe they see Venmo as a hassle. Oh, I have to get that app. I have to put in my information. Can't I just write you a check?
We know which way the world goes. The world goes with the young. That is inevitable. Cash and checks, horse and buggy. Allison Griswold with Slate in New York. Thank you very much for joining us for a minute, Allison.
Thank you.
Later in this hour, we'll talk more to a cybersecurity expert about mobile money. But first, joining me from San Francisco now is Josh Constein, cyber sociologist and senior writer for TechCrunch, closely follows the mobile money space. Josh, thank you very much for being with us.
Yeah, happy to be here.
So this is a growing thing, money getting more and more fluid, more digitized, more tap and go. Give us a sense of the range of things that people are using Venmo for, or to use the verb form, Venmoing about with.
So you can think of anything that people would pay for that they would pay for with their friends, they might split through Venmo. So me and my friends, for instance, I've been a user for about 3 years, mm-hmm. and you know, we've done a 26-person dinner where two people paid for the check and then everyone else just Venmoed them. Or you know, going out for drinks and one person buys the round of drinks and somebody else Venmos them half the bill. Splitting cabs, splitting rent, splitting vacations. But then there's also people who use it to sort of run their household finances for, you you know, apartments with multiple people in them. And then you have a lot of interesting transactions that on Venmo's social feed are listed as things like that thing that time, or you know what it is. And there's speculation that people buy drugs through Venmo.
I have to say, when I think about my financial life, the percentage of transactions that are splitting tabs, now maybe this is an age thing, but when I was younger, it would have been higher. It's not that big now. So is this a big deal?
It's certainly a big deal for the younger market, and you could think of peer-to-peer payments as just the first step. So yeah, college students, high school students, young adults living in urban areas, they're around their friends a lot, they're going out a lot, and they're going to be the ones who are most in need of these peer-to-peer payments. But as soon as these companies can give you a legitimate reason for you to enter your billing information or your debit card, they can do a lot more with it afterwards.
Does this move on up and become, or is it already, the way I pay my my carpenter, my plumber, my the barista at the independent coffee shop down the street? I don't know.
I think that's the plan for a lot of these services. They want to start with peer-to-peer payments because it's easy, it's fun, and it's hard to do right now. Paying your plumber, you can pay with cash or with check, and it's relatively normal and easy. Whereas paying for friends, you know, if you went out with them and you drop them off in the cab and then you go home and you want to split that bill with them, you're not right there. They don't have a way to process credit cards, so you need peer-to-peer payments. But from there, there's a lot more that can be done. And so you can start with thinking about e-commerce. So for instance, Facebook now has payments through Messenger, but really what that did was give Facebook a way for you to enter your debit card information into Messenger. And from there, you can imagine what Facebook could do with it. So right now, Facebook runs all these e-commerce ads on its websites, you know, hawking products. But for you to buy those products, you have to actually click through, go to another website and make the purchase there, where you have to enter your billing information in some cases. If you have your credit card or your debit card on file with Facebook, potentially it could one day allow you to just buy things right from the newsfeed, right from that story, rather than having to click through anywhere. So if peer-to-peer payments could be the first step to making buying something as easy as liking something.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about digital money, mobile money, and peer-to-peer electronic cash now flying phone-to-phone, changing the way money moves. You may be way into this already, or you may have known nothing about it until a few minutes ago. It's big. Here's a little sound from just one of these. In November, app maker Snapchat introduced Snap Cash, their way of moving money, introduced here in this vid.
Snapchat has Snap Cash. Just use your cash to send money easy. It's oh so easy. Snap Cash with Snapchat. Chat your cash amount straight from your bank account. Send money easy. It's fast and breezy.
Snap Cash, Snap Cash, Snap Cash in Snapchat.
Oh my gosh, it sounds like 1959, but it's right now. Money easy, it's oh so breezy, it just flies. We've been joined by Josh Constein at TechCrunch, senior writer there in San Francisco. With us now in the studio as well is Karen Webster, CEO of Market Platform Dynamics. It's a consulting firm. They focus on payment innovations. There's a lot of them out there. She's also CEO of the news website payments.com, which covers the payments industry. Karen, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Is this a big deal? Is this the future? Cash is going to seem like old hunks of gold. Nobody carries it around anymore. And money just flies everywhere. It's woven through all of our web lives.
It certainly is the future, and I think part of the reason that it's getting so much traction is that all the things we've been talking about eliminate the friction of paying people and paying merchants, and that's really what the mobile device, a device that's with everyone almost 24 hours a day, never out of our sight, is making possible. It just makes it so much easier to do the things that check and cash and other forms of payment just introduce friction and make hard to do.
We want to think about what it means to live in a friction-free world when it comes to the movement of money. Plenty of response here online. DJ writes to us, I cannot remember the last time I wrote a check, like 10 years ago, DJ writes. Nathan says, my wife and I are planning a day out at the ballpark. She bought a section of seats last night and has already been paid back for them by our friends via Venmo. I hope it's safe because we love it and use it often. Never had issues in Nashville. But Crow writes to us, says here, cash will always be king. Do you agree, Karen?
So cash has been around for thousands of years, and I don't see it disappearing in the next decade or so. But certainly, we're seeing the percentage of cash as a percentage of what people are using to spend diminishing. Now, of course, if you look at the percentage of the population growth, population is growing. People still use cash in certain situations. So cash is growing as a percentage of the overall pie, but the percentage of cash that people are actually using to conduct transactions is declining.
Josh, you've got a little sociology in your background and plenty of tech. How does it change our relationship with each other and with value or money when it's just zipping digitally? Does it make any difference?
Well, you know, people say that there's nothing worse than money coming between friends. And the ability for mobile peer-to-peer payments to eliminate those debts, to make it so everyone's squared and even Steven all the time, could actually promote and enrich our relationships because you don't have to worry about that. You know, if somebody owed you $10 but you didn't see them in person, you'd have to sort of worry about that and remember that debt in your head. And you'd always sort of have that little grudge like, oh, why didn't they just pay me? It would have been so easy for them just to hand me $10.
So but human relations become more harmonious. Due are settled. But maybe, maybe not. I mean, anybody who would duck out on what they owed you before, couldn't they still duck out?
I mean, they could, but there's a paper trail now. When you, in Venmo, for instance, you can send someone a payment request being like, hey, you owe me $20 for splitting dinner last night.
Yep.
And they can just tap a button or just punch in a quick code and instantly pay you back. And it makes it so easy. So if somebody is, you know, being a deadbeat, sending them one of these requests, it takes all the friction out of their side of making the payment. And they just have to do a quick reply. And I think that that really gets people who are reluctant to pay or really just forgot about it to do it super quickly. You don't have to remember the next time you're physically around each other.
Karen, now Facebook comes in here just in the last few days. Of course, they're big. They want to keep people in their universe. But as we heard Josh saying, this could mean weaving payment potential into so much of the fabric of our lives. The president of Messenger is David Marcus, who was president of PayPal before. Right. So they could have big plans here. What about that weaving in of what anytime you're anywhere online in the digital world, things are kind of ready just to click and the payment's done.
Well, that really is what everyone is aspiring to achieve, making payments invisible, embedded in some other application that achieves another objective or purpose. So Uber, I think, is the great example of making payments very invisible. You're hailing a taxi, you finish your ride, you get out, and nothing happens other than this.
It's all behind the scenes.
It's all behind the scenes.
They've already got your credit card. You've already agreed to a price. There's no tip. So you're just in and out of the car, and there is no payment moment that you partake in.
So that's the whole making payments invisible promise and aspiration that everyone is really trying to achieve. Now, you know, Facebook has experimented with payments over the years in many other ways and fashion. They've done gifts. They've had lots of other innovators put storefronts up on Facebook to try to get people to conduct commerce on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Those experiments haven't quite been as successful as I think Facebook might have liked them to be.
I mean, Josh, that makes it feel like back in the day, the value was associated with, I don't know, the hunk of gold or the cash or the coins. Now it's just, it's kind of embedded in you, the person, walking around with your digital orb, your cell phone. I mean, wherever you are, if you are attached to monetary value, it just will sort of live around you.
Sure, but it's not just about having it with you all the time. That certainly reduces the friction, but the ability to have an easier track record of what you've paid and it could help the actual users, but the big platforms are so incentivized to do this because if they can get that transaction data, if they know what you're buying and paying for, there's their ability to target you with relevant content and ads skyrockets. So if Facebook knows, you know, eventually that it through its payment option that you're buying sneakers at, you know, a sporting goods store, or even if you were just shopping at a sporting goods store, it could then show you more ads for sporting goods and its revenue goes up, even if it doesn't have to take a cut of those transactions.
Let's go to our listeners. John in Fort Rucker, Alabama. John, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My comment, I guess, is, as you said earlier, they're digitizing our accounts more and more, making it easier and easier just to swipe your phone or your debit card. And I myself, I just got a debit card for the first time about 2 years ago after I got remarried. I'm not entirely comfortable paying things online because I know it's very smart people that have written these programs to protect and keep hackers out, but there's an equal number, if not more, of smart people that are doing all they can to break through all those firewalls and protections. It just seems like it's harder and harder to write a check anywhere. There's so many restaurants that won't even accept a check. They want cash or debit. I think that all in all, doing away with cash, even if it is 100 years out, is not going to be a good idea.
Do you feel like you're in the horse and buggy there, John? Like you may not like it, but, you know, you may like the horse and buggy, but it goes away anyway.
Well, it does go away. It does go away. And you know, I'm going to deal with whatever comes along. But I do like to keep cash on hand. I'm more comfortable with cash on hand than I am actually going into the digital world and trading ones and zeros from one account to another.
Yeah, John, I appreciate your call. I mean, habits are very deeply embedded here, Josh, and you can hear it.
It's funny because I'm so the opposite. I'm always worried that if I bring a lot of cash around with me, my wallet's going to fall out of my pocket, or I'm going to get pickpocketed, or I'm going to leave it somewhere. The idea that my money exists inside my phone and there's nothing there really to steal, you know, I can just cancel my accounts if necessary and I can get, you know, there's no real money lost. That appeals to me. And so I'm actually more afraid about keeping cash in the real world than in the digital world.
Karen, this could just flip. This won't just fall out of your pocket. It's not in your pocket,
well,
really.
I think cash has a very tangible dimension to it that a lot of people still like very much, as I think we heard from this caller. Mm-hmm. And there are certain people in society that really prefer cash because they can count it. So you know exactly how much you have to spend. And that, to a lot of people, is a great comfort.
Of course, you can always see a number of what's in the account. That's also information. It tells you what's there.
It's not like being able to look in your wallet and see, I have $100, I have $20, and when that's gone, that's gone.
And when it's in your account, can you always remember what you've what's up against that already? David in Atlanta. David, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. Thanks very much. Very interesting discussion. I used to work for a very large investment brokerage firm associated with a bank. And the one thing I remember is, anytime someone has access to get money or you need to get money someplace from your bank account, you have to give that individual or that entity a routing number along with your checking account number. Now, wow. I may not understand Venmo. I got to admit, I don't have that app. I use online banking, very comfortable with it.
Yeah.
But if, for example, you want to pay an electric bill, if you let them take it out of your account, they have to have your routing number and your bank account. And I'm wondering, you know, one, I guess somewhat of a security issue, and it may be that I don't know, maybe there's some other way to get at your bank account now, but it may be one of these things. Is this very easy, but is it a security issue? If someone gets that routing number to your bank account and your checking account number, that is very dangerous. And as this gets more and more used, I think you are going to have folks who are going to say, hey, let's see if I can get in this. But that whole routing number, bank account number issue, that's the way you get into bank accounts. That's the way you get your money out of bank accounts too. You know, banks are still middlemen. The money goes, you know, from you to an entity, but it goes through banks.
And with the right numbers, it's not just taking it a little. You can clear it out entirely, David.
I won't even use the electric company anything. I will not give anyone a routing number to my bank account other than, say, a brokerage company or something where I want to transfer money.
David, you're very vigilant. Let us pick it up. We're talking about mobile money. Josh.
So our last caller, your concerns are warranted, but I don't think you're quite understanding things. You don't necessarily have to give your checking and routing number to these companies for them to be able to help you make payments. You can just give them debit card information, so it's more secure. Also, PayPal and Facebook actually have really strong records around security, and there hasn't been instances, or at least significant instances, of people being able to sort of hack in and pull money out. There's been times when, you know, card information or passwords have been compromised, but they almost are always immediately reset, and so it's not quite as insecure as you would think.
But we heard from Allison Griswold about the Venmo story of Chris Gray and his $2,800 gone, you know, in an instant.
I agree. There are those issues, and I think Venmo was wrong to miss out on extra security steps. There was no two-factor authentication. There was no emails letting people know that somebody has changed your settings, and now they've fixed that and they've improved that, and I think that was critical and it was a big mistake of theirs. But in general, these services aren't getting hacked the way that people think. It's not like a bank heist where you break in and you steal the actual money. It's more like somebody, they somehow lost their password. They got their email hacked. They went through they're a victim of a spam or a phishing attack or something where they gave their information or somehow lost their password and profile information, but they didn't necessarily lose access to their account. But yeah, these companies, if you're dealing with money, you can't have a skeleton customer support team. You need to have people there waiting on the line to help people who have problems.
Alex Watson joins us right now from San Diego in California, CEO at Harvest.ai. It's a cybersecurity firm focused on data breach prevention. Alex, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. Very happy to be here.
What do you think of security in this realm? Mobile money, it's flying and floating all over the place compared to the alternatives. And on its own hook, how do you assess its security level?
That's a great question. I think that the use of mobile platforms in particular, you know, I actually think it adds quite a bit of capability as far as security is concerned to the previous, you know, either writing checks or exchanging cash.
So a net gain in security. Make the case for that view.
So I think that it allows banks to and also financial institutions, Venmo, things like that, to really understand where cash is going and to apply some pretty advanced analytics. We've seen particularly PayPal very active in this space, applying machine learning. They've got a team of data scientists and financial scientists where their exclusive job is to track and search for fraud across the network.
So they're thinking, does this transaction make sense? Does it fit with the pattern of expenditure we've seen by this customer? That sort of thing.
Yeah, which I think they've had quite a bit of success with and adds an extra level of security when you're transferring cash between people.
Karen, talk about smart money. I mean, at that point, yeah, you've got Big Brother looking over your shoulder, but we've all had this experience, I guess, by now, of credit card, saying, hey, wait a minute, do you want to really make this transaction that we're seeing asked for here?
Yeah, and I think that that's the risk analytics engine working behind the scenes. But I think what mobile devices can also do is to authenticate that the identity of that person. So
unless it's been robbed.
Well, there are a lot of now very sophisticated device fingerprinting and forensics that can associate the patterns and detections of the person using that phone, and especially with Touch ID now, it has to be your fingerprint unlocking that phone, to associate that phone and that series of transactions with that individual.
Of course, the data itself, the identity itself, never mind the physical phone, could also be robbed.
Well, that's true. And, one of the things that we saw with the Apple Pay fraud situation recently wasn't that it was the security of the Apple Pay device itself or the Apple Pay application itself. It was the ability of fraudsters who had gotten a hold of fraudulent account credentials from
Target or right, some of those
Home
big
Depot,
breaches,
then created a new account and then
just fed it through their Apple Pay, and that was a way to disguise it. I mean, Alex,
yeah, this makes it.
Oh, sorry, Josh. Please.
This makes it more important than ever for people to not use the same email address or at least not the same password for all of their accounts. It was one thing when you were just talking about like fun social networking or maybe some like light personal email, but now that we're really moving our money around through our digital devices, I highly recommend people not use the same password for everything, because if you get compromised one place, you could get compromised other places. So figure out some system of a way to change each password for each website.
Alex,
yeah, I definitely agree with you on that one, Josh. And I think to add something to it, if you look at data breaches that have happened across, for example, the past 5 years, I think there's been a tremendous upsurge, particularly in 2014. If you look at, for example, Verizon releases statistics on data breaches, a total of 570 million records that were breached, and that crosses health insurance records, PII, things like that. You know, of those 200 million for credit card information, 170 million were full financial account details. So it's a sign that attackers are absolutely targeting this type of information.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about mobile money, peer-to-peer, electronic cash now, flying phone-to-phone, changing the way money moves. Venmo, Facebook Messenger, Snapchat's Snapcash, and a whole lot more. Karen Webster is with us, CEO at Market Platform Dynamics, with me in the studio. Alex Watson joins us from San Diego, cybersecurity expert at Harvest.ai, CEO there. Josh Constein, senior writer at TechCrunch, is with us from San Francisco, as sort of a cyber sociologist himself. Lots of interesting response here online. Cole wants to know how these apps make money. We'll look at that. That ends up playing out one way or another. Becca says, my friends and I are going back to cash after all the hacking at the big stores, Target and the Home Depot, the big box stores that got credit card and banking information hacked. The only thing I use a non-cash payment for now, Becca writes, is online shopping. And I use a credit card with a very low line of credit so I won't lose thousands of dollars if someone steals the info. We'll go to that. And then there's this from James. He says, given the revelations of Mr. Snowden, would it not be logical for the government to want to shift as much commerce as possible to an electronic system that can be tracked, archived, and data mined? Would not a transition to 100% digital, he's not happy about going there. We'll look at all of that. Michelle is joining us from Detroit. Michelle, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, I'd just like to share, I consider myself to be a fairly intelligent person, and yet when I look at my bank account statement online, it doesn't penetrate my brain in the same way. It's just another level of abstraction. And I think about, it's like asking myself to do higher calculus, you know, and I can do it, but it's not making me as responsible. And if I'm like most Americans and I have debt, then I think it just prompts me to make worse financial decisions. So it's something that I have a general fear and caution around. Not around security even, which is another matter entirely.
But fearing yourself, maybe, and the trigger finger on expenditure. I'm glad you raised that. I'm sure a lot of people are thinking about that. Josh Constein, what about this issue, the super abstraction of money? You know, there's something about if you've got $50 in your hand and you see $40 go away, you really feel that it's only 10 left. If it's online, is it real? Do we get in more financial trouble?
I think many technologies in the modern age really require us to have more self-control. You know, if you are just binge without any restriction, you know, you could watch Netflix for 12 hours or sit on Facebook all day long. And similarly with money, you know, credit cards really were the first big move towards making it so easy to spend money that people spent money they don't have. But the whole point of some of these systems is designed to avoid that. So Facebook actually purposefully chose to not let you pay friends or add a credit card to your account through Messenger, because they didn't want there to be a opportunity for people to accidentally spend too much money or to get charged with fees that they weren't expecting that could hurt their money. But long term, I actually think us interacting and handling money less directly is good for our hearts and souls. I don't think that dealing with money generally makes people happy. Maybe like receiving it does, but in general, the minutiae of transactions I think is stressful for people, and making those more invisible helps. You know, getting out of an Uber cab and not having to fiddle with the money and the tip, I think that makes my experience so much happier, and it keeps me clear-headed and focused on my day rather than worried about money. And so I think mobile payment will help us bring that same clarity to more parts of our lives.
Let us hope. Karen, let's go to our Twitter listener Cole's question about the interests that intersect here and how these apps, the companies behind them, make money. It's not clear from Venmo, at least to my eye, that there's no transaction fee when I zip cash or zip money to a friend.
So a lot of the P2P applications are free. So you wonder how, in fact, do these guys make money? And
maybe they don't. I mean, maybe they're still riding on venture capital investment or something. Where are they headed? What?
Well, it's all about the data, as Josh pointed out. It's the data and the ability to monetize the data in new and different ways.
Wait a minute. What do you mean?
So monetizing data, using transaction data, using data about what people are doing, where they're going, where they're spending.
So every time I send $20 to Joe, someone's paying attention, and this adds up to an update. They can make. They can.
If you and Joe are going to XYZ restaurant in XYZ city, there are opportunities for advertisers and other interested third parties to monetize that data.
But there's no advertising associated with Venmo directly.
Nope.
Are they counting on climbing up the ladder and getting into something more like a credit card charge at some point, if this is used at point of purchase?
Well, I mean, certainly you could imagine a scenario where the ability to pay other people extends to the ability to pay merchants and the ability to pay other people and then monetize things that way. But it's really all about getting a user base and registered accounts that can be used in the future in lots of different ways.
I mean, there we see a difference between this and cash. Cash, largely untraceable, leaves no trail here. The trail is out there and gets sold and sliced and diced a million ways. William in West Palm Beach, Florida. William, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
Couple of points. I believe that these kinds of transactions are going to promote impulse buying. When I have cash in my wallet, I know whether or not.
You know whether or not you've spent it. I think we lost you right there, William, but the impulse buy question comes up in a hurry. Is there data on that, Karen, whether people are more likely to spend when it's mobile money, digital?
You know, I haven't seen any specific data that says, generally speaking, people do spend more when they're not able to examine specifically what they have available to spend. But clearly, it's an opportunity to give people the chance to buy things that they might not otherwise be able to buy or want to be able to spend.
We've heard of the problem of drunk texting, and now I know friends who sometimes get home
spending.
And they just go on an Amazon binge, and they don't even remember the things that they bought until they show up at their door. So it definitely can increase impulse buying.
Sarah in Medway, Massachusetts. Sarah, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Thank
Hi.
You.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll try to make it quick. I am very adverse to all of this. Think of debt collectors. Think of stalkers. And then another way of saying, you know, robbery or somebody getting access to your money is not necessarily hacking, but what if they did some sort of, like, target robbery where they see you have a really nice car and they jump in your car with you in a parking lot after you've been shopping or something and hold you at gunpoint, and if they get to the point where they make it so fast and so easy and everyone has a phone, they hold a gun to your head, take out your phone, download this app, transfer all your money into it, or if you already have it, let me see the amount, send it to my account, and then they just send it off, you know, to multiple different sources and different, you know, and then...
Sarah, you should be a screenwriter. You got a whole TV episode right there. But let's pick it up. I mean, Alex Watson, this is not exactly cybersecurity we're talking about here, but it's true, I guess, that when you have these apps, you have access to cash right there in your hand. They don't have to drag you to an ATM. I guess they could jump in your car and say, unload your account into mine. Here's the address.
Well, that's a very good point that she brought up, right? So it is, in all effect, the digital wallet. And it is, you know, it's not outside the realm of possibility that someone could hold you at gunpoint and ask you to transfer essentially all of your money from either your debit account or credit card over to an account that they could run with.
Is there a fire break against that, Karen, of some kind?
Well, I mean, I certainly think that would be very much the exception than the rule, something like that.
But people pay attention. I mean, they know that there's a limit to how much money is in your wallet. But when you've got a smartphone, they also know there may be not so much of a limit on what you have access to.
Well, I mean, there are limits to what you can transfer in any of these applications on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So the ability to drain your account in that scenario, I think, is pretty minimal.
Joe,
yeah, another case that I think using moderation, right, kind of limiting the amount of money that can be transferred in or out really helps protect you against kind of corner cases like that.
Can you set parameters around that?
Well, the banks do.
Oh, I see. Just at the bank, at the source. Joe in Melbourne, Florida. Joe, you're on.
Thanks for taking my call. At the beginning of the hour, I think I picked up that each time I use this app, something is going to go out to all my friends telling them what I spent. And that's one of the big drawbacks I have with Facebook generally. I, I basically stop all the feeds because it's a nuisance to me. Mm-hmm. And the idea that I want to let one person know or put a comment that everyone in my feed is going to have to know about that, it takes time for my day. And the idea that each time I use the app for a purchase, that I'm letting everyone know what I bought, that will prevent me from using the service. I've got less concern about the security than I do about that intrusion.
Yeah, that's very interesting. John, I'm glad you circle us back to that. Karen, do you think that social aspect that Venmo has, that Facebook could easily have, will last here? Will that become a part of our transactional lives that, just like it seems half of everything else we do now, we're sharing with our network of friends, quote unquote?
I think that's an interesting point because Five years ago or so, Facebook tried something similar with an app called Blippi. And
it's called Beacon.
Well, there was Beacon, and then there was Blippi.
The Bible.
So Blippi was basically a communication in your feed about what you bought, and you could register yourself with this particular service, and it broadcast what people spent in the news feed. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people didn't like that because they didn't want to broadcast. None of your business. Mm-hmm. And for lots of different reasons. But I think it's different strokes for different folks, right? It's, the younger generation is perfectly comfortable letting their friends' network know that they just paid Joe $20 for the dinner that they split two nights ago. I'm not particularly comfortable doing that, but lots of people are. And I think part of the reason we have lots of different choices, from the bank-led apps like Clear Exchange to now Messenger to Venmo, is to give people lots of mechanisms to take the friction out of paying other people.
Alex, what do you think? Transparency is the byword of this new digital age more and more. I don't know how it factors into security, but are people going to become transparent even about their financial lives?
Yeah, I think it's just kind of part of lives that people like to share with each other. I think to some extent, it creates a kind of shared knowledge between you and your peer group, which can be another validator, which is kind of an interesting thing. We'll see how that evolves. But once again, it's the horse and buggy. I think it's inevitable that sharing.
I want to get to this issue. Oh, Josh, please. Josh, what do you say?
I actually think that the social feed that shows you what you can opt into on Venmo to share what you're buying or what you're paying for friends for, I think that's the worst feature in Venmo. It makes it harder to get to the screen where you actually pay things. And I know the reason that they added it was because it helps with user growth. So what happens is people think it's kind of funny. It's a little bit viral when somebody pays someone like 10 cents for something really silly. And they're like, oh, you got to see this on Venmo. And people are like, okay, I guess I'll add the Venmo app so I can see this joke that you're talking about. But really, I think that was a novelty. And a few years ago, we were really in this era of oversharing where everyone was trying to share everything. You know, Facebook was working with other apps to pull in everything you listened to on Spotify or every news article you read and post it to the news feed. But I think we're moving away from that oversharing. And with Facebook's newest feature, they're not telling anyone about who you pay or what you pay for because they saw what happened last time. People got so angry about it. So I think we're really moving towards a more privacy safe way of doing this where, yeah, people know that transactions are interesting, but not interesting to everyone.
I want to go, if I may, to this Big Brother question. How much of this data will be visible to, you name it, the NSA, the federal government, or just to these big players? Last Thursday, Tim Berners-Lee, credited as being the inventor of the World Wide Web, told Fox Business that he worries that mobile payments will be dominated by just a few or maybe even just one player.
The biggest worry has always been, does the thing become completely controlled by one big company or by one big government or by one big thing where you're not quite sure whether it's company or government?
Alex Watson, what about it? There is a ton of data here. Karen Webster points it out. That will be sold and shared. This can be pretty intimate. You may share it casually, socially, but if you think about someone looking over your shoulder with interests that you may not welcome, it can be a scary idea.
Yeah, I think you can make an argument, kind of the counter of that, which is saying that, I would say the legacy is that just a few organizations, the banks, have this level of knowledge. I think a company like Venmo, where you have, as we mentioned earlier, a 70-person employee, very early stage company, creating alternatives for people to use to share cash, actually, helps negate some of that Big Brother problem. There's many more places that your data or your financial transactions occur. Which makes it a much harder problem for any one person to have complete visibility into what you're doing.
Of course, unless it all gets concentrated. Karen, what about, I mean, this time of year, people are thinking about one particular organization looking over the shoulder, the IRS. Historically, if the IRS came in to do an audit, one of the first things they would pull would be your bank accounts and your checkbook. Do they use Venmo records to look at your financial life in the same way they would have bank statements and checking accounts in the past?
That's a very good point. I don't know. I mean, I would certainly think that if you're using Venmo to transfer money from an account to an account, that would ultimately end up in your account. So
true. I don't know, Josh. Is it just as clear as a traditional bank statement would it be if it comes audit time with the IRS?
I would presume that anything that's at the end connected back to your bank account would be accessible by these sort of big brother agencies. The question is sort of how much are the platforms that are helping you with these transactions, how much are they protecting you? And basically, how resistant are they to getting data requests from the government? You know, some companies have sort of been, patsies and just handed the data over, but some companies have really tried to fight and say, you have to have a very specific legal reason to be able to get this data. And so obviously you're going to want anybody who's handling your transaction data to protect you as best you can.
Karen, you're talking with a lot of companies and others about how this is going to unfold. Look, I don't know, what is it, 10 years, 20 years out? Does mobile money become the thing? Does cash, checks, do they become horse and buggy?
I think checks for sure will go the way of the horse and buggy. I think cash will still have a lifespan, but clearly mobile is the way the world is moving, and it's moving in that direction for lots of reasons. It's a better way for communication to happen between people and people and people and merchants and other businesses, and that's the opportunity that everyone is really pursuing.
And with all that data floating around, transactions won't just come naked as they would with cash. I mean, I guess in a lot of cases, they'll know more than just the amount of money you're paying about you, potentially, as you pay it. Karen Webster, CEO of Market Platform Dynamics. It's been great having you with us this hour, Karen. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Alex Watson at Harvest.ai in San Diego. CEO there. Alex, thanks for joining us today on the security front.
Thank you very much, Tom.
And Josh Constein, senior writer at TechCrunch in San Francisco. Josh, wonderful to have you. Thanks for being here as well.
Oh, my distinct pleasure.
Listeners, happy spending, I guess. Moderation, please. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.